the conversation should be on police violence and the murder of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor, and so many others. But instead, we end up getting into a conversation about burning buildings that have insurance where people can rebuild buildings, but they can't bring back lives.
Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm Natasha S. Alford, VP of Digital Content at The Griot.
And I'm Marielle Turner, Senior Editor at The Griot. And this week we're asking, Dear Culture, how far can protests get us?
So many of us have seen the video by now, or at least heard about it. 46-year-old George Floyd struggling with a police officer pinning him to the ground before he takes his last breath. It's gut-wrenching and a stunning act of cruelty, one that has sprung people all over the world into action. We're now entering our third week of worldwide demonstrations demanding justice for George Floyd.
But of course, it's not just about George Floyd. People are marching for all the other Black people who have been killed at the hands of police. They're marching for reforms and even the abolition of policing as we know it. They're marching for changes and a slew of other structural inequities that Black people face. Still, for many of the people who are demonstrating, George Floyd's story is what mobilized them. Just this week, he was laid to rest in his native Houston next to his late mother, following 3 days of public memorials in Minneapolis, North Carolina, and finally Houston, and many have come to pay their respects.
We had reporter Bobby Penn on the ground in Houston on Tuesday, and she spoke with residents who came out to support and honor the life of George Floyd.
For you to be here today, what does this mean to Houston?
Well, because this is Houston, and it's a community where no matter how tough it gets, we always come together. And George Floyd was, and his family, you can see the size of his family, is well known. And we're ready? Is well known in the Third Ward in Houston, and we wanted to stand with the family and let them know that, and we've made the promise that the sacrifice of their son will not be in vain. He's really going to help change the world.
Thank you so much. I came out today because I just wanted to be able to show our support to George Floyd and all the Black community. This all is based in Houston right now, and we're lucky to live not that far away. So of course we're going to come out here. It's a good thing that we're living in this generation because it's horrible that that was caught on camera. But if that wasn't on camera, then the whole world wouldn't be reacting the way that they are right now.
And I feel like our generation's like one of change and one's like bring people together. So I feel like we're going to continue to do that.
Awesome. Just curious, would you guys say you're Gen Z?
My professor calls us Gen Z.
Tell me, what does all of this mean to you?
That Jesus is trying to make us learn a lesson, because since all this has been happening for many years, he's wanted us to learn that all lives matter, and especially Black lives.
You know, things really feel different this time. The demonstrations have been impossible for elected officials to ignore. And with the whole world watching, many have pledged to finally take action.
You're right, Marielle. All of the officers involved in the George Floyd case have been charged. This is like unreal. And as we've seen in the Ahmaud Arbery case as well, where his alleged killers were arrested after a national outcry, it looks like everyone's being held accountable. And now we're in the midst of a debate about police reform and even the abolition of police, which some say would have seemed impossible even months ago. So, Marielle, can you believe that? Like, that we're literally talking about abolishing the police?
Yeah, it's actually shocking to me that change has been moving so quickly. You know, George Floyd was just killed on Memorial Day, and already we've seen such drastic measures enacted. And I really just didn't see that coming.
Yeah, it's funny. Someone was telling me that it feels like we're living in an episode of Black Mirror or the Twilight Zone. Is like, wait, I'm seeing more white people in my life than I've ever seen before wearing Black Lives Matter shirts. Like, what is happening? It's very different. But, you know, I guess there's some people who would argue that that is how change happens. The status quo is taking a long time, but revolution is something that you act on. You know, when you get a moment, you just have to go for it.
Yeah, definitely. I think that it really shows the power of protests and demonstrations and the change they can bring, right? But now we have to ask the question, what's next? So what does activism look like after the marches are over and the protesters have gone home? And what does being, quote unquote, done look like?
Yeah, that's right. And we know that you're never quite done when it comes to fighting for justice or progress. It is a marathon, not a sprint. Shout out to Nipsey Hussle. So, you know, these are really tough questions and good ones. And today we have the perfect guest to help us answer them.
Yeah, absolutely. You might recognize our guest today. She gave this speech in response to the protests happening across the country, and the moment instantly went viral.
This is a coordinated activity happening across this nation. And so we are in a state of emergency. Black people are dying in a state of emergency. We cannot look at this as an isolated incident. The reason why buildings are burning are not just for our brother George Floyd. They're burning down because people here in Minnesota are saying to people in New York, to people in California, to people in Memphis, to people all across this nation, enough is enough.
Oof, that was a speech. Wow. That is, of course, Tamika Mallory, activist, organizer, and co-founder of Until Freedom. She joined me on Instagram Live last week, and we talked about activism today, what organizing looks like, and about her role in bringing the case of 26-year-old Breonna Taylor to the national stage. If you're unfamiliar, Breonna was shot and killed in a botched police raid while sleeping in her home in Louisville, Kentucky, all the way back in March.
Yeah, and that fatal shooting, you know, was so tragic. It broke the hearts of so many people and really got people to speak out and get out into the streets and share her story, including Tamika. So let's hear a little bit of her discussion with the Gria.
Tamika,
Hey, sis. What's going on?
Oh, it is so good to see you. How are you?
I'm tired. I'm sleepy. I'm perpetually sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all good. Every time I see you, it's just so much beauty. You are such a beautiful woman, Natasha. Really, you are.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
I tell you that all the time, don't I?
You do. You have always lifted me up. And the same for you. You know, I see you as a big sister. A lot of people draw inspiration from your work. And I have to say, you were doing this before it was popular, right? Before, you know, everybody had gotten on board, and you have gone through the ups and downs of activism. You know that there's consequences for speaking out. It's not always everybody on your side. Just talk to me about what has the past week been like? So when did you touch down, you know, in terms of where have you been throughout the week?
Yeah.
And what have you been up to? So let's start there.
So we all know Breonna Taylor was murdered in her home by the police in Louisville, Kentucky. And you can't tell the story enough so that every single person gets to hear it and understands the significance of what happened to Breonna Taylor. She was in her home sleeping with her partner, her boyfriend, Kenny Walker. It was late at night. There was a knock on her door in which Kenny and Breonna asked, who is it, who is it, who is it? The people on the other side of the door did not respond, but they began to make adjustments and movements to the doors if they were coming in. And so Kenny fired one shot, a warning shot. The police who were outside, and he fired a warning shot, and he called 911. So no one calls the police on the police. It's very clear that he did not know who was on the other side of the door. The police returned fire, and they shot at least 30 bullets into the house. The bullets went into many places, including the upstairs apartment where a five-month-old baby was sleeping.
Mm-mm-mm.
And I stood outside of Breonna Taylor's apartment and looked at the bullet holes that were around the window frame for her sister's room. Her sister, Janiyah, lived with her. And the bullets were in the frame of her door. Janiyah stood with me and pointed out the marks. She said that in the room, everything was destroyed. The bullets were in the wall, the dresser, and just all over her room. The bed was destroyed, all of that. So if she had been home, she was traveling to California. But if she had been home, Tamika Palmer who is Breonna Taylor's mother, would have been burying two daughters instead of one because mm-hmm. she would have been dead. They fired shots into an apartment that had closed blinds. So they didn't even know who was shot. Kenny was inside the apartment when Breonna was hit 8 times. She hit the floor. No one was coming to help her because obviously at that point it was a standoff between those inside the house and the police. So Kenny had to, what he said to me, which just ripped me apart, was that he walked outside finally because he was, and even though he was afraid they were going to kill him, he walked outside because he wanted help for Breonna. He wanted someone to help her. And mm-hmm. so we decided when we heard this story, and by the way, we went to Louisville, Kentucky in May. This happened on March 13th. So for 2 months, there's been absolutely nothing.
Silence.
Nothing has been done. Silence in 2 months. And so we went there. My organization, Until Freedom, my son, the general, who also has been on the griot, and you all have worked with him, Linda Sarsour, my Palestinian Muslim sister from Brooklyn, and we decided we were going to go to Louisville, stand with the family. Attorney Ben Crump gave me a call, told me everything that was happening with Breonna Taylor, and he was like, hey, sis, need you to get on this because, you know, this sister's not getting any attention, and that's a problem that we have to deal with. The fact that when Black women are murdered by the state and when Black women are hurt in many ways, in a multitude of ways, sometimes our movements are not as loud. We're not as bold. We're not as present. And someone else said to me the other day, it gave me more perspective, that the media also controls the narrative and the media does a poor job of representing Black women and Black women's issues properly, especially when it comes to state-sanctioned violence. And so Attorney Crump said, hey, and also Attorney Lenita Baker, who is the local attorney, a Black woman in Louisville, they said, come on down, you know, help us out. I spoke with Tamika Palmer, Breonna Taylor's mom, and she's like, we need some help here. Can you imagine what it feels like for 2 months? Your child's been murdered, and nobody's doing anything about it. It's just,
it shows, you know, they don't care. It shows
they don't care. Things were going on business as usual. And so we mobilized. We went down to Louisville. We stood with the family. We had 2 rallies. On Memorial Day, we held a rally in which, oh man, the community came out to her actual apartment to support her. There were many white folks there who came to stand with the community. And I'm not surprised that Louisville has been so active in the protests over the last few days, because those people were fired up. They were pissed off about what happened to Breonna Taylor. So we did that the first day. The second day, we held a rally at City Hall and a press conference. Again, hundreds of people showed up, all different races, all different creeds. Everybody was there to support Breonna Taylor's family. And unfortunately, what we found at that rally is that it wasn't just Breonna Taylor folks there. There were other families that came out hoping that their voices for their children and their loved ones, their brothers and husbands would also be heard. So we felt proud that we were able to help the local community, BLM Louisville, to bring together that type of coalition of individuals and to give many people voices. While we were planning to go to Louisville, we found out that in Indianapolis, there had been 3 murders by police in 24 hours, including one woman who was pregnant and a cop ran her over and killed her and her unborn baby.
Oh my God.
So we decided it was 2.5 hours drive away and we were going to go to Indianapolis. Our flight was set to leave from there, leave our rental car there, but we were going to go visit with the family, specifically of Mikel Rose, who was a young man who was killed by police in this 24-hour period. And that's the same place where Sean Reed, the young man who was driving his car and the police were following him, and we saw the officer lean down into the camera, not knowing it was there, saying, you know, this one won't be an open casket funeral or whatever disrespectful comments they say. Terrible.
Horrible.
And so that, we went to Indianapolis. While we were on the way, to Indianapolis, we learned about what happened to George Floyd. And we made a decision. We said, you know, it's a 10-hour drive. We were tired. We hadn't slept because, you know Natasha from being around us. We go hard. When we go in, we go hard. We don't rest. We organize everyone we could think of. I'm always afraid no one's going to show up. That's me. Nobody's coming to the rally. So I need to call every preacher, every organization, the street dudes, everybody to get people to show up. And our entire team, we obsess over our work that way because we know that when we step out there, we have an opportunity to really make a difference. And so we have to do it like we mean it. And that means you put a lot of your stomach. It gets in it, like your heart, your stomach, everything gets in it. So we're tired as hell, but we make a decision. You know what? It's three drivers in the car. I know Linda Sarsour is on here. She's a punk because she doesn't drive.
Hey, Linda.
So three drivers in the car. We'll pull 3 hours or so each and figure it out and we'll go. And so we drove down to Minneapolis and we, on the way, learned about George Floyd. And we contacted the lawyers, Attorney Lee Merritt, Attorney Crump, who was the lead attorney, and just listened to the story of what happened there. By the time we got there, so the night we were driving, the streets in Minneapolis were already popping. People were getting it in. So when we went the next day, we jumped in to figure out how we could help. We bought resources. We donated to a few organizations. We gave money to the bail fund because people, while we were driving, we decided to do a live and people started giving us donations to help us along the way. So mm-hmm. we said, you know what? Since that's happening, we're going to help with the bail fund. We're going to help with different things. They really didn't have an infrastructure to what was going on at that time. So we just jumped in and helped however we could. So when we first pulled up in town, the first, just getting out the car, the police were using the taxpayer dollars to build a wall around the jail. I mean, around the precinct to protect okay. themselves from the protesters, as if the protesters okay. were responsible for killing George Floyd. Like, how the hell are you mad at us? You know, there should have been a humble attitude. People want to know why did they start vandalizing and what was all of the confusion about? It was because we, the protesters, were met with a militarized force to deal with a murder that their police department committed. They didn't show up and say, hey, guys, we messed up. We're sorry. We fired these cops and we're going to do all we can to ensure that they are accountable for their actions. No, they showed up with riot gear, shields, batons, tear gas, rubber bullets, in which my son got, he was a pepper spray. Linda happened to be standing right next to a woman who got hit in the eye with a rubber bullet and the woman's mm-hmm. eye was bleeding. I was mm-hmm. coughing. Angela, I mean, it was just mayhem, right? Because they were attacking the crowd. And the crowd was saying, well, hell, we're dying anyway. So we might as well just stay in the street and continue to fight back. That's a tactic that is used by the opposition, is to put people in disarray so that the media and others can't stick to the message. Because the conversation should be on police violence and the murder of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor, and so many others. But instead, we end up getting into a conversation about burning buildings that have insurance where people can rebuild buildings, but they can't bring back lives. So we went there, we got in, we were engaged, we began to build with the community. And I'll tell you something on the looting piece that's so important and this vandalism, violence narrative. We went to Mike Freeman's house, who is the county attorney in Minneapolis. His home has like a sloped yard. And people were sitting on his yard like they were at a movie theater, watching the rally that was taking place on the street in front of his house. People were everywhere, thousands of people. It was almost, I mean, it was so many people out there protesting, everybody, white, black children, grandmothers, everybody was out there. Mm-hmm. Nobody threw one brick. Because guess what? The police presence, there might have been two cars. And that's it. No one vandalized. And we were up again. I mean, I wasn't, but people were up at the home. They were sitting on his yard. No one burned anything. Why is it? I went to the memorial site where George Floyd was actually killed. Guess what? People were out there by the thousands. They were protesting, crying, talking. They were talking smack. They were saying some good words out there now. Don't trust that. They was talking.
They had a reason.
They had a reason. But they weren't vandalizing anything.
Right.
What happens is that when people come into contact with militarized police, the tension levels go up. And I don't know at what point this country will get it. And the sad part is that they would rather folks burn down buildings than to actually arrest four officers.
Absolutely. And, you know, as you talk about the Breonna Taylor case, again, it's this idea of why do Black women get overlooked? You know, why do we not have that same passion and sense of urgency around saving their lives? And that's why we have the hashtag Say Their Name, that's because right. So many Black women, again, have been victims of police brutality, and it's just been radio silence.
Absolutely.
In dealing with them.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I'm really interested in talking about what is next, right? Because the fight is not over. So three officers were arrested, but we know that often, and it's four total now, but the officers who killed Breonna are still walking free.
They're on administrative leave, which means they're taking a break and hoping that the movement will pass over so that they could go back to work.
Right. And so I guess that's my question for you is people, these businesses, you know, politics, all of that, they had to respond to the people. So how do we keep our power in this moment? How do we, you know, keep the pressure on so that we don't see like happened before with Philando Castile and how many other cases where people go to court and then we don't get a conviction? How do we keep the pressure up?
And that's a major concern. And I'll say this to you as well. Again, that's a major concern. Whether or not there will actually be a conviction. We have so much work to do. There's this concept that protests don't work. Well, I could go down a list. Ahmaud Arbery was also killed months before we heard anything about it. And because of digital organizing that was done by Sean King, the lawyers, Lee Merritt, and all the attorneys involved, Brother Chris, giving us information and getting people engaged, we had that component. Then we had all the local organizers that were out there protesting and on the ground. Shout out to Brother Marcus Coleman, Sister Yanaza Howell Lone Wolf, the NAACP Youth and College Division there in Georgia, in Brunswick, Georgia. People were out there organizing. They were protesting, okay? And as a result of them protesting, two people were arrested. And then they tried to be like, okay, we got two. And then everybody's like, hell no. Homie that was driving the truck, okay, videoing, he got to go down too. So people hit the street some more. People sent some more emails, made more phone calls. They got together and not one brick was thrown. Not one brick was thrown. Not one building was burned. And now all of those individuals are actually in jail. Okay, so don't say it doesn't work. Because we see examples of when it has worked. The problem is we take our foot off the gas too quickly. Mm-hmm. We see a little bit of change or a little success, a little bit of a victory, if you will. And then we're like, okay, I could go back to work, go back to, you know.
Yep. Scrolling. Just post on the gram, you know.
Right. Go back to scrolling on the gram. Yeah. I'm back to my normal life. I'm not really paying attention. And so guess what? When they go to court, the police will be there. And remember, the McMichaels, the men who killed Ahmaud Arbery, one of them is a former police officer. Mm-hmm. And the police officer, one of the police officers from Brunswick, Georgia, was the person who actually called or texted the owner of the home and said, hey, if anybody comes to your home or anything happens, call the McMichaels, not the chief, not call me, not call the station house. Call the McMichaels, freaking slave catchers.
Vigilante
slave catchers.
Yes. Oh my
and
God.
And let them know, and they'll take care of it. So don't tell me that law enforcement was not also involved here. And it just goes to show you the level of corruption and white supremacy that exists within the entire criminal justice system. So when it comes time for hearings, oh, they're going to be there. The police will be there. The community that supports them will be there. The Make America Great Again folks will be there. And then we are back doing whatever else it is that we have going on. And we got a lot of trauma and a lot of shit in our families and our kids and this and that. So I'm not saying that I don't understand, but we have to be vigilant to the end. Because when we stick to the end, that then we will be able to truly, and if we don't win, we can say, okay, now we know that we've got to do something else. We got to turn the tables over because we've put everything on the line to make sure that we win in this situation. And it's the same thing with the elections. Oh, we don't want to vote for this one. We don't like this. No, it's that we don't demand anything of these people once we get them in office. We vote for them and then we go home and we expect that somehow by osmosis things are going to happen. But it doesn't happen that way. Special interest groups and Black people should be a special interest group.
Mm-hmm. Period.
To be clear, when the special interest group go ask for what they want, they demand it and they don't stop until they get it. And guess what else? They put their money where their mouth is. So Black people have $1.4 trillion. Elected officials care about money and votes. And so we have to find ways to fund our own candidates and to make sure we're showing up in elections and after elections if we want to connect the dots. The protest movement is great, but the protest movement has to be connected to something after. It has to be connected to a long-term strategy.
So, you know, there was a time when everybody was talking about body cameras, right?
Right.
And we just saw that a Black man was killed and no body cameras were on, even though they were there. What other policies would you like to see us advocate for and fight for in this moment, in addition to these cases that we have pending, you know, where we're hoping to see a conviction? What other things should we be asking for?
So one of the things that I found to be interesting, and I think I knew it, but it really was crystallized for me when we found out that in Minneapolis, the chokehold is actually not, or in Minnesota, the chokehold is not illegal. But in New York, it is illegal. And it still took us 5 years, even with it being illegal, to get Daniel Pantaleo fired. It took us 5 years of protesting, Eric Garner's family being out there, National Action Network, Reverend Sharpton, so many doing incredible work. And then I think the nail that like was in the coffin or went into the coffin was when many of us as organizers got together and showed up at the Democratic debate. And we actually went to the debate, happy to go to the debate. We were just regular people. We were going to the debate as regular folks. And when we got there and sitting and listening to Mayor de Blasio, and he starts talking about his record on police community relations. And we just freaked out. Like, did y'all hear that? And we just started being like, boom, no, out. And I think that was like the straw, right? Mm-hmm. That it finished him. And then he came back home and knew at that point that he had to ensure that Daniel Pantaleo was fired. And we know that a woman who was the judge on the case and the hearings, the internal hearings, she advised and suggested that Daniel Pantaleo be fired. So we had to go through all that for 5 years. So imagine here in Minnesota, there's no chokehold bill at all. There's nothing there that says that a chokehold is illegal. So now that tells us we've got to have one standard. That the federal government, that Congress has to pass laws that would make certain things illegal in every state so that we have protections all over this country. We can't have something working in one place. We don't know over here what we can't, we don't have that luxury. We need protection in general across the entire system. So that's one. Two, I know that the attorneys, Attorney Ben Crump and Attorney Lee Merrick, have been talking about all of these cases. They have too many cases. Some days I worry about both Lee and Ben because they don't rest. They stay up all day and night walking, talking, phone calls, different organizers that are in different states that they have to deal with. And I worry about their health and sanity as well because they have too many cases. There's too many bodies. And there are other lawyers that have other cases. It's not like they have all the cases. They just have too many of them or too many cases. And so what they're saying is they can't continue, and we can't continue, and this country can't continue to look at these cases as being a little pocket over here, this city, that city. No, the federal government has to look at all these cases as a pandemic.
Just like COVID.
Because with COVID, when there's a pandemic, you get money, you get resources, things shut down, people stop moving until the issue is addressed so that the virus does not continue to spread. Well, I would say to you today, Natasha, that police violence is a virus and it spreads across our communities and it is a pandemic. It is something that we've been dealing with for far too long, and this country has to do something about it. It is time for the Department of Justice, and it probably won't happen under this president, and maybe it will. Maybe it will. You never know what strange things might come out of this White House.
2020 is unpredictable.
It's unpredictable, especially when people are trying to win an election. And I see somebody saying state of emergency, exactly, that the Department of Justice would address this as a state of emergency and say, you know what, we've got to look at all these cases and look at the systemic issue of racism and white supremacy that exists within the criminal justice system as a whole. Because with these cases, while yes, we have people in jail, we have people charged, now they got to go talk to judges. So these judges who are part of the same system that is not designed to hold people accountable for taking Black life, who knows what they might do? We together, we're going to do the work. We're going to put our bodies on the line. You make an investment so that we can get where we need to be, so we can feed our families, so we can take care of our health, hygiene, and otherwise. It's an investment. Well, the same rule applies with elected officials. If you want people to run for office, you want them to be your voice, you want them to be an uncompromised voice, and for them to be free, free to speak. Everybody saw how much they loved my speech, which I didn't prepare for. I said what was on my heart. I said what I know to be true. I said stuff that you probably heard me say before, but maybe this day it sounded different. It was in the right moment, in the right place, at the right time. And the reason why I can say that is because I'm not being funded by the same people that I'm fighting. I'm a free Black woman that I can speak my mind. And the only way I can remain that way and say the things that people want me to say and do what it is that people are asking me to do to be where I need to be, to speak on behalf of Black folks across this country, Black people, brown people, poor people, marginalized people, disenfranchised people, is that I need your help to keep me free. We spend $1.4 trillion every year. We have money. We have plenty of money. We just spend it in the wrong ways. We don't understand that we have to also make investments so that you could go back to the elected official and say, oh, hey, I know you're over there paying attention to XYZ group, but you know, white women got you doing something over there for them. But Black women are over here telling you that we put X amount of dollars into your campaign. We voted for you 94%+ for someone like Hillary Clinton, whether we loved her or not.
Yep.
We have expectations of you for our community.
Tamika, we cannot let you go today without asking, how are you taking care of yourself?
The one problem that I had in Louisville, it was okay. Indianapolis, not good at all. And then in Minneapolis, terrible, because one, you had the stay-at-home order, but then also, in addition to stay-at-home, you had the protests happening. So food was like non-existent. Everything was closed very early. Buildings were boarded, and we didn't get to eat. Like, this whole time that we've been on the road, eating has been a complete struggle. So, you know, now I'm back, and last night at like 2 o'clock in the morning, I was eating, just trying to like get some, you know, I'm already a little teeny beady person.
You petite,
Tamika. If I don't eat, I'll disappear. I'm turning 40 on Monday, and I really don't want to just be out here like looking
40
like
where,
a little
sis.
Thing,
wait, we have the same birthday? Your birthday's Monday?
June 8th?
I have my birthday's June 8th.
Oh my God. I never knew that.
That's amazing.
So now we're eating, we're back. I got my first night's rest. And, you know, again, like I said, we put so much into it. But my team, we are a group of people who actually love one another. We support one another. We challenge each one of us to be greater, to be better.
Wow. Well, we wish you blessings, you and your entire team, untilfreedom.com. For everybody who's watching, that's where you can get more information about supporting Tamika's work and the larger work in our community. Tamika, keep up the fight. Keep your eyes on the prize. Keep up the good work. And, you know, we will be behind you all the way. Thank you.
We want to thank Tamika so much for joining us. Now for this week's moment of clarity. Responding to the cries of activists, Minneapolis City Council have voted to disband the city's police department. Here's the council president, Lisa Bender, speaking a little bit about their decision making.
Our commitment is to do what's necessary to keep every single member of our community safe and to tell the truth that the Minneapolis police are not doing that.
Wow, this is powerful. I don't think I ever thought we would hear those words. But on the flip side, many of us have seen that video of the mayor of Minneapolis, Jacob Frey, being confronted by protesters about whether or not he would support disbanding the police department.
Jacob, go home! Go home, Jacob, go home!
That was hard to watch, Mario. It was like he was on the stage at the Apollo and they were not feeling him.
Yeah, it was definitely cringeworthy. You know, he seemed so dejected by their response to him. And I think he has great intentions. He just didn't really know how to interact with their demands.
Yeah, that was definitely a moment I'm sure he will never forget. But, you know, Mayor Frey says that he does support reform. So how has he responded in that regard?
Well, he thinks the department should be reformed and he's committed to working with community leaders to do that. But this is the key thing here. The council voted with veto-proof majority, so he can't single-handedly reverse their decision.
So if Minneapolis police were to be disbanded, what is the city council saying will take its place?
Well, they haven't released those details yet. For one, they said this will not happen overnight. It's not going to be a quick fix. But they did say they'll be looking into the community in addition to drawing on past studies and reforms to policing that have worked to devise a plan.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Marielle, for breaking down that moment of clarity. I know that we will be following this story on thegriot.com. I want to remind our listeners to support and show love to your Black businesses, especially during this time. Make sure you donate to your local organizations, religious institutions, whatever works for you. The business that we will be highlighting this week is called Soul Squad.
Yes, Soul Squad. They're based in Washington, D.C., and they're here for all your custom t-shirt printing needs. So Soul Squad has provided people, brands, and businesses with high-quality merchandise, whether simple or complicated. Matter of fact, our friends at Soul Squad made custom merch just for us that we love. From idea to finished products, let them print for you. You can check out our very cool gear on Instagram and Twitter, and check out Soul Squad at soulsquad.com.
Yes, I love our new Dear Culture t-shirts. Shout out to Soul Squad. Thanks for hooking that up. And of course, you know, the Griot has published a list of 50 plus Black businesses to support during the coronavirus pandemic. And of course, you know, during protests, many Black businesses have had to rebuild. So if you'd like your business to be featured, email us at info@thegriot.com. That's G-R-I-O. So, Marielle, before we end the show today, I just have to say Dear Culture has been around for 3 months. It's our 3 month anniversary. Congratulations to us.
Round of applause for Dear Culture. So excited.
Absolutely. Shout out to all of our amazing co-hosts, our executive producers. You know, we really just love and appreciate you guys. And we love telling the stories of our community. We want to thank our audience for tuning in. You know what was really interesting, Marielle? Would you guess this top state? This is the top state that listens to our podcast. What would you think it was? Like, if you had to do a wild guess?
I mean, if I had to guess, I would say New York, only because that's where we're based. But that's just a random guess.
Okay, well, New York is in the top five, so you are not too far off. But actually, the top state that listens to Dear Culture is Texas. Shout out to Texas. Okay, what's up, Texas? You making me want to go down there. Maybe that's because y'all, you know, didn't exactly have to shut down the way that we did in New York. And you're just, you know, you're commuting, you're going places, you're listening to the podcast. I don't know why, but Texas is number one. So definitely big shout out to you all. Second is the great state of California. They have had the second most downloads in the past 30 days. So Cali loves us too. Shout out to the West Coast. Marielle, you spent some time in California, right?
Yes. I'm actually there right now during quarantine. So, you know, shout out to Cali. Great state. We're so excited for you guys to be listening to us. And also Texas was really surprising. I did not see that coming, but thank you so much, guys, for tuning in. And thank you for listening to Dear Culture.
That's right. And in addition to Texas and California, we're going to shout out Florida, New York, Illinois, and Georgia. Y'all are also our top states. So make sure that if you're listening to us, you guys also email us your questions, suggestions, and compliments to podcast@thegrio.com.
If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast. And share it with everyone you know.
The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Grio and executive produced by Natasha S. Alford, Rob Dozier, and Kevin Y. Brown.